welcome once again to Proverbial Perspectives. I'm Shahid Ahmed, your host for this edition, and we're going to look at a very, I think, timely subject and interesting subject this evening. And the topic of the title of our program this evening is called The War on Drugs, The Forgotten War. And with me to discuss various aspects of this war is Executive Director of ACBO, better known as the Addiction Counselors and Certification Board, Executive Director Eric Martin. And we're going to talk about addiction and its effects right here on Proverbial Perspectives. And of course, you, our audience, is always encouraged to call in with your questions and or comments at KBOO 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187, as we discuss the war on drugs, the forgotten war. Stay with us. Opportunity to welcome Executive Director Eric Martin of ACBO, the Addiction Counselor and Certification Board, to the microphones of KBOO Portland. Welcome, Eric, and we're certainly glad to have you on board this evening.
I'm glad to be here this evening, Shahid.
Yeah. Perhaps we can begin by you telling our audience a little bit about your organization, a little bit about yourself, and a little bit about your organization.
Well, I'm director of the Addiction Counselor Certification Board of Oregon, and I'm on the Governor's Advisory Board on Drugs and Violent Crime, and I'm an instructor at the University of Oregon and with the State Child Welfare System. The Addiction Counselor Certification Board of Oregon certifies all of the alcohol and drug counselors in the state. We give exams, we authenticate people's transcripts and education, And we basically ensure to the general public that people are qualified and safe to practice as addiction counselors.
Mm-hmm. On your monthly newsletter, you publish a monthly newsletter for all of the counselors in Oregon and elsewhere. And I believe, first of all, it's on your website, too, I believe, right?
Yes.
Okay. And you may want to just begin by giving us your website address so that the...
The website address is www.accbo.com.
Okay. On your monthly newsletter, your headlines read, "Does everyone really need a master's degree?" And you mentioned just a moment ago how you certify folks and you basically authenticate their educational experience. And the article talked about and gave a quote from Dr. Carl Rogers, and that basically deals with the question: is too much education for counselors? Does that make them too clinical? Does that make them, too intellectual?
Well, that's one of the things that
is that good or isn't that good?
That's one of the things that Carl Rogers proposed in the early 1970s as he changed the name of his therapeutic approach from client-centered therapy to person-centered therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And he proposed that when people get too much education, that they become too clinical and begin to lose empathy for clients, and they have difficulty having empathic relationships with clients. And that was something that he proposed. I don't know how true that is. I mean, I know lots of people with various levels of education, but it's important to recognize that there's a place for everybody, regardless of their level of education in the field of addiction counseling.
I know the being involved somewhat in the field myself. I know that there's been a movement last 10 to 20 years to make counselors a little more educated about various aspects of psychology and human behavior. But obviously there's a need for people who have, sort of like the wounded healer syndrome. Obviously there's a need for people who have personal experience and want to make a contribution to be involved in addiction treatment and recovery. How many recovering addicts choose to go in the field? I don't know if you have any statistics about this.
About a third of all the certified counselors in Oregon are recovering themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it does tend to be fairly important. From the client's point of view, and I think this rings true with most people. I mean, anybody that overcomes a problem, for example, I can't remember her name. There was a woman that lost a bunch of weight, and she used to have diet videotapes that people could buy, Susan Powers or Powder or something like that. But she had a photograph of herself where she was rather obese, and she lost all this weight. Jared from Subway. Everybody knows Jared from Subway. And there was a guy that was grossly obese that lost a bunch of weight. And it seems to resonate with most people that when somebody is able to overcome a problem, then they have something to offer. And about a third of all the counselors in Oregon are recovering, and research does show that it's actually rather important. There was actually a research project here in Portland called Spirit One, which studied a group of 208 addiction treatment clients, and they rated that as one of the top most important factors of their counseling experience, was that, in fact, their counselor was recovering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where are some of the places in Oregon where recovering addicts or just individuals interested in the field, where are some of the places that are around the state? Where are they located, and to what extent are there qualifications?
Do you mean like places they can go to school?
Yeah, places they can learn to become counselors, and I think they probably have to do that first, right?
Right. Portland Community College has a great program, Chemeketa Community College, Mount Hood Community College, and that's just in this area, Rogue Community College, down in Southern Oregon, Treasure Valley over in Eastern Oregon, COCC in Bend, all of these community colleges have addiction counselor training programs.
Mm-hmm. 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Our guest this evening is Executive Director of ACBO, Executive Director of the Addiction Counselor Certification Board here in Oregon, and his name is Eric Martin. And please, if you have any questions and or comments related to this field, please give us a call. The war on drugs. Are we winning the war on drugs? You know, I listened to the president the other night, and we talk about he winning, and that's, I guess, a matter of perception, the war in Iraq. And we've had war on poverty. We've had war on hunger. We've had war on drugs. And those wars doesn't seem to produce much of the same kind of attention that physical wars do. We know now that Oregon has a very, very epidemic methamphetamine that has, I guess, even taken the whole country now. But Oregon is kind of really, really well known for us having this problem. Are we winning the war on drugs, or is the war on drugs largely being ignored?
Well, in some ways it is sort of a forgotten war, and the country is really split on this. So I guess my answer to your question is both yes and no. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that largely in America since 9/11, drug use has gone down. It has gone down dramatically in most states, except in a handful of states, of which Oregon is just one of, and where drug use actually went up. So largely the major drug problems that are happening in the U.S. are the West Coast states and in the Midwest. So while several states, lawmakers, politicians, have described the methamphetamine problem as being literally a state of emergency, most states in the country have actually seen drug use go down since 9/11. Mm-hmm. So in those places where methamphetamine and drug abuse is high, it's really bad. And in the rest of the country, it seems to be going down.
Mm-hmm. If it's going down, is that probably part of the reason why, and I'm not certain how the funding situation is, are the programs being funded as they were a number of years ago, or are they losing funding, or is funding increasing, particularly with this methamphetamine problem?
Well, funding for treatment out of the federal budget has remained about the same over the last 5 years. And prevention funding has gone down, and that has been reduced. Now, while treatment funding out of the federal government has remained the same, Oregon treatment funding has dropped by about 60%. And this has largely occurred at the state level. And that's because treatment funding comes from both the federal government and the state, and even some money comes from counties and cities to provide addiction treatment services. Mm-hmm. So in Oregon, we've lost a lot of our local money for addiction treatment services, and we are at risk of losing federal money. So Oregon gets about $22 million a year from the federal government to do addiction treatment, and we are at risk of losing about $6.7 million for addiction treatment because the state just isn't putting up enough money. And essentially what the federal government says is, you know, for every 60 cents that we put up, you need to put up 40% or 40 cents to match it. Mm-hmm. And that creates the treatment dollar in Oregon. So they call that matching funds or maintenance of effort funding. Well, because Oregon is spending so little on treatment right now, we are at risk of losing $6.7 million from the federal government, not because they're not willing to give it to us. They're willing to give it to us, but we just have to match it. Mm-hmm. So for every 60 cents they put up, we have to put up 40 cents. So we end up losing funds as a result of that.
I believe we have a phone call here. Let's go to our phones and see, well, what's happening. KBOO, you're on air your question and or comment, please.
Yeah, I think this is a great, great subject, especially in the way of African-Americans. I think there was a Peter Hart poll. I don't know if you guys mentioned it or not, but there's a Peter Hart study that said that for every dollar that you put into treatment, that's $7 saved.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about if you don't put money into treatment, ultimately you will be putting those dollars into jail. And we know that treatment versus incarceration really is the best way to go. And all of these studies show that, but here we have a prison industrial complex that makes so much money for the country. And what we end up seeing is black and brown bodies going into jails while white bodies go into treatment. I just completed a video called Meth Around where some of those issues are being dealt with. But ultimately, the question I have is, at what point do we, as the regular folk, begin to get involved and make sure from the mayor to any elected official as well as the federal government are truly looking at treatment as an option versus prison? And I'll take the answer off there. Thank you.
And thank you so much for that call.
That was both a great question and great comments. And the study that you're referring to is the Cal Data study. And it was a study that was done in California. And the Cal Data study showed that for every dollar invested in treatment, society saves $7 in associated cost. And there have been more than 600 studies that have looked at both the effectiveness in treatment and the cost-benefit ratio of treatment. And cost-benefit means if we send this person to treatment, will they cost society less money as a result of, like, reduced auto accidents, reduced jail time, reduced prison time, reduced worker comp claims, reduced medical costs, reduced unwanted teen pregnancies, and all of these various things that substance abuse causes in our society. So we've actually had research here in Oregon. Dr. Michael Finnegan did research back around 1996, and he did a rather large study here in Oregon that showed for every dollar invested in treatment in Oregon, $5.60 is saved in associated cost. There was a recent study that was completed in Multnomah County comparing drug court, which is largely an outpatient process, drug court compared to what they refer to as business as usual. And business as usual, like the caller said, is just putting people in jail and prison. So they compared the cost, and it was a rather large study here in Multnomah County. It was a study of 1,167 substance-abusing offenders. And what they found at 30-month follow-up, so about a year and a half, two and a half years after the initial recruitment of the 1,167 participants, they found that they had an upfront savings of $1,441.52, and that was just upfront by not having people in jail. And they found that at 30-month follow-up, that they had a savings of $5,071.57 per drug court participant compared to people that just went through business as usual, locking people up in jail and putting people in prison. Mm-hmm. Because it just doesn't do anything in regards to just locking somebody up in a box doesn't change anything in regards to substance abuse.
You know, and that, I think, is one of the most ironic aspects of the society we live in, just the other day we had the mayor, Tom Potter. I think he's a great mayor. I think he's doing a wonderful job. But now we're talking about adding on another tax for children, you know, for the Portland public school system, and please don't get me off on that, particularly how they educate African Americans. But, you know, here we spend all this money, and then we don't spend money to have prevention, have some of the things that's going to keep people from being incarcerated, that's going to put a further strain on society in terms of you know, social welfare costs and other crime and different things of that nature. And it's just really, when we see how we spend these billions of dollars in Iraq, you know, because, well, we're not going to talk about how we got there. We got a mistake, but we're there, and so we got to spend this money. I mean, it's really, really ludicrous. So we got another phone call here. And I want to thank that caller because that was really a great question. You're right, Eric. That was a great question. Let's see what we got here. KBOO, you're on the air. Your question or comment, please.
I just want to know, how should young people get involved in order to help out with this issue?
Great, great question. Thank you. Any ideas, Eric?
Well, obviously, there's contacting, you know, your legislator. I mean, that's first and foremost. Contact your legislator and express your opinions about this. Oftentimes, we hear of law enforcement treatment and prevention being a three-legged stool. And that's just about everybody's favorite description of law enforcement treatment and prevention. Right now, the Oregon Department of Corrections spends about $121 million a year on nonviolent drug offenders. And these are folks that are in jail and in prison, nonviolent, didn't kill anybody, didn't attack anybody.
They just want to smoke some weed.
Right. Their basic crime is drugs. Mm-hmm. Possession drugs, dealing drugs, manufacture of drugs. And nonviolent drug offenders, about $121 million. We spend about $73 million a year on treatment, so that's about half as much, and about $7.5 million on prevention. So if you can imagine this three-legged stool, you have a very long leg on there that's about 121 inches long, and then another leg that's about half that size, that's about 73 inches long, and then a very small leg that's about 7.5 inches long. And that stool cannot stand. There is no way that stool can stand because we don't honestly have a three-legged stool. So the number one way that people can get involved in the process is contact their legislator and express their views to their legislator that we need to start investing money in treatment and prevention. And we're creating serious problems by incarcerating people too much, especially women. Let me give you a few statistics, Shahid, and see what you think about this. Okay. In 1995, 6% of Oregon's prison inmates were female. In 2005, that went up to 8%. In 1995, 21.3% of Oregon's probationers were female. In 2005, that went up to 28.4%. 28.4% of everyone on probation in Oregon is female. We are increasing the rate of incarceration and adjudication, criminalization of women. Now, from a prevention aspect, this is not a great idea because research done right here in Oregon tells us that the children of incarcerated women are about five times more likely to eventually become incarcerated themselves. It's not a great idea to separate mothers and children. And a lot of times people are like, well, that person's a drug addict and stuff like that. You can ask any kid, you know, would you rather be with your parent that may be addicted to alcohol or drugs or has abused alcohol or drugs, or maybe has a problem with alcohol or drugs, or would you rather be with total strangers living in foster care? And any kid, just about any kid, will tell you that they'd rather be with their parent that is struggling with chemical dependence.
Chemical dependency. That was a great question that young person asked, and I think in addition to some of the things you're talking about with respect to notify the legislators and try to get some of these government people in government involved and at least thinking about this problem and trying to make a difference in this problem. I think this particular young woman was talking about was maybe what are some of the things she can do personally. And one of the things I would suggest in terms of prevention, some of the things that Eric is talking about is, you know, start something at your school. You know, get a little, you know, get the young people together in your group and say, well, you know, we gonna abstain from weed. We gonna abstain from drinking. Have alcohol-free prom parties, or you know, get back in this thing here. You know, get back into that thing, and really want to encourage you. One of the reasons why we're doing this program is because we want to encourage you to and empower you to do that. You know, the media in this town, whether it's KTU and Lars, and they don't deal with this subject. Only the radio station like cable deals with these kinds of subjects, because you know this kind of subject is not pretty to talk about. But look again at the cycle of abuse that Eric is pointing to, and we can see that this is a very, very serious program. I think we have another call, Eric. Let's take this call right quick. Cable, you're on air. Your question or comment, please.
Yes, I had a comment. You know, I think people assume just because you know, money is diverted from the prison into treatment, that, you know, that's going to be less money to spend, that people are going to go into jail. But actually those jail beds are already funded, and you know, I actually don't think that the government's really that interested in saving money. And so I, you know, just like we have, you know, a jail out in North Portland that is sitting empty, and you know, they certainly want to get that filled. So you know, I mean, you know, being kind of a pessimist, I kind of don't think really that, you know, our government is really interested in saving money by putting people into treatment. So there's not really an incentive to increase treatment for people in the long term.
Well, one of the things, you're absolutely right. One of the things that's again is ironic is that they're not interested in saving money and putting people into treatment, but at the same time they build these jails, they sit empty, while Bernie Giusto and Diana Lynn argue back and forth about how much overtime monies correction officers are getting, you know, and they're spending money one way or another. And this is I think this is our whole point. But you bring a good point to and the money is going to be spent, as we pointed out, on other areas like foster care, like you know, low test scores and poor performance in school, which leads to, you know, all kinds of problems later on. I mean, you know, when are we going to be sophisticated enough as a society, you know? And if you go to any sociology 101 class, they'll tell you this. I don't understand why here these folks in Salem, Oregon can't understand it. But thank you so much for your call.
I just had one other short comment. You know, that jail was also built at a time of decreasing crime rate in Oregon and Portland. And, you know, the government officials really basically scared the population into coming up with the money to build that jail because of the potential for that sort of thing. So, you know, the reality was ignored by public officials, and they convinced, you know, the population to fund that now empty jail.
It's like a teacher used to tell me in school, don't bother me with reality.
Exactly.
You know, just write a good story
much.
When you're doing news, you know, don't bother me with facts. I want something.
Exactly.
It's interesting, you know, and thank you so much for that call. Thank you. Yeah. David, he points out several interesting aspects, Eric. We're going to be coming right back and discussing more of this. One thing you want to see is, and I believe this the last caller referred to it, does treatment really work? I think a lot of folks say, well, we're spending money and this and that, but does it really work? So and another aspect that I really want us to begin to focus on is many African Americans, like you were saying, that prison was built in North Portland right when the crime rate was going down. Many of us in the African American community think that incarceration now has become such a big business that now it's about business, about the business of locking people up. Never mind about the ancillary cost that's going to derive from it. So we're going to be coming right back and talking about, does treatment work, with Eric Martin. and he's the executive director of the Addiction Counselor Certification Board of Oregon in just a moment. Again, our telephone number, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187.
When you lose the one you love, your heart goes through changes. Especially when the sweet memories still hold a thrill. Just when you think the pain's all gone, don't fool yourself, 'cause here's the deal, that's the way love works. You got to hurt, Lord, well, before you heal. Go at your head. Say you're gonna cry. Oh, you're gonna cry. Then when the tears, they may stop falling. They may stop falling. All down your face. But they still fall. Oh, my Lord, we're down in your heart. Well, you never know how long the wound will take to heal. It might take months, could take years. That's the way love works. You got to hurt, Lord. Well, before you heal. Look out, son.
Yeah, Mr. Bobby Boobland and Bobby Bland, whichever you prefer, and his composition, You Gotta Hurt Before You Heal, and we certainly hope that that's not the case. We have a caller on line one that we want to hear from now, reminding you that you're listening to KBOO 90.7, Proverbial Perspective. I'm Shahid Hamid, along with my guest today, Eric Martin. He's the executive director of ACBO, the Addiction Counselor Certification Board of Oregon. And we're talking about the war on drugs, the forgotten war. So with that, we'll take a caller. Caller, you're on the air. Your question and or comments, please.
Okay. First comment is good job, good program, good issues. Next comment is you're coming very close to what I would want to talk about, but I want to be sure that you actually close in on it. The way the system works of having a lot of people in prisons is that that's like slave labor available to some big businesses that use that labor to make better profits for themselves. And to me, I think that's a big part of the motivation of why funding by people who have money that could help, they rather have people in prison than give them rehabilitation programs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you comment on that, it could add something to your discussion, and I'll let you answer when I'm off the air.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It is a sad commentary for this country of freedom and our quest for freedom around the world, quest to impose freedom by any means necessary, it appears, that we are the largest, we have the largest population of people incarcerated in the industrialized world. And that, I think it is a sad commentary. I'm not certain what can be added to that, but you're welcome to certainly try, Eric. What are your thoughts on what our caller has just common.
Right. Well, I've heard that proposed before, that that's one of the motivations to have so many people locked up in prison, and I'm not knowledgeable enough to know all of the different motivations for why people want folks locked up in prison. But in a lot of the meetings that I go to down at the state capitol and around, a lot of the folks that I sit in meetings with, especially from law enforcement and things like that, they sort of clearly believe that that's the only option. And oftentimes people have their sense of justice lies in retribution. Treatment basically proposes to heal families and to heal relationships between mothers and their children, to heal people and get them back on track. And in this other form of justice basically proposes to get revenge and retribution. And there's a variety of different types of justice, and some is helpful and some is punitive and punishing and can be hurtful. And in some cases, it can make people worse. One of the things that you brought up before we went to break is, does treatment actually work? And actually, the statistics show that treatment works well, and it works better than business as usual. It works better than simply locking people up, which seems to be fairly ineffective. But people have sort of this idea that if somebody goes to treatment, that if it doesn't get everyone completely sober and in recovery, that somehow treatment is a failure. Well, treatment's never going to get everyone sober and in recovery. The largest study that was ever done was a study called DATOS, and it concluded in 2003. And DATOS was a study of more than 10,000 people that went through addiction treatment, one of the biggest studies ever. And this huge endeavor showed that there was a 50% reduction in drug use at 1 year and 5 year follow-up. There was for those people that went through outpatient, a 37% reduction in crime. And for those that went through residential treatment, a 61% reduction in crime. And we have very effective treatment here in Oregon. For example, Powder River Alcohol and Drug, very few Oregonians know about this program, but it is nationally famous. People all throughout the criminal justice system, the Bureau of Justice, know about this program in Oregon. And Powder River Alcohol and Drug operates inside the Powder River Prison. And as substance abusing offenders reach the end of their time, some of them opt to go to this prison treatment program. And this prison treatment program, in their 2001 audit, they looked at people 1 year after they were released from prison, after they were released from this prison treatment program, and 1 year after their release, 88% were drug-free and crime-free at 1 year follow-up. 88%. And so does that mean 12%, you know, committed crime and or relapsed on drugs? Yeah, that's what that means. But 88% is remarkable. Even 50% is actually quite remarkable, because when you look at the cost of treatment, and the typical treatment episode cost about $2,500, it's a very inexpensive treatment to implement, and the cost-benefit is huge. It is massive. And even if it only worked half the time, okay, half the participants that went through treatment, that's still more effective than just about any medical treatment.
You know, we talk about addiction, and I would be interested to hear more about the Powder River program, particularly what methodology do they use? Because I've seen studies that does not that don't talk about one method being good for everybody or being effective for everybody. A 12-step may not be as effective for some as rational recovery or cognitive behavioral methods, things of that nature. So I would be really, really interested on saying that. But a lot of us seem to forget that the addiction, and this is, again, one of the reasons why I think more funding needs to be allocated towards addiction in various kinds of addiction, there's a growing gambling problem. And not only here in Oregon, but nationwide, especially among the youth. So what's going on there? There's still our old friend alcohol. And we know that the state legislators, I think, had some new laws passed this year, beginning the first year, of those who are caught drunk driving. But nobody talks about alcohol anymore, or nobody talks about...
Yeah, it is often quite ignored. And while the news likes to, you know, ride the wave of methamphetamine and identity theft and stuff like that, oftentimes alcohol is quite overlooked. And it's important to remember that alcohol is the number one drug for which people are in treatment in Oregon. It's not methamphetamine. It's alcohol. And we have a serious alcohol problem in this state. Oregon eighth graders drink 54% higher than the national average. Nationally, nationwide, 11% of all the alcohol sold in the U.S. is consumed by minors. In Oregon, 17% of all the alcohol sold is consumed by minors. We have a huge drinking problem in this state. We have the lowest effective beer tax in the entire United States. And we are an extremely beer-friendly, meth-friendly state. And alcohol is a major problem. Now, I've worked over the years to try and get Oregon's malt beverage tax, beer tax increased unsuccessfully because we have a really strong alcohol lobby in this state. And I worked with a coalition last legislative session called Dime a Drink to try and get Oregon's beer tax raised. And we know that when the cost of beer goes up, that youth are more price sensitive than adults. So 10 cents on a drink of beer, on a can of beer, isn't going to mean very much to an adult, but it could mean a lot for a young person. Mm-hmm. And research clearly tells us that when the cost of alcohol goes up, the biggest drop in consumption is among young people. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we really need to take a look at is the cost of alcohol in Oregon.
Well, we have this opportunity. You're listening to KBOO 90.7. This is Community Radio, and I'm Shahid Hamid, and this is Proverbial Perspectives. My guest this evening is Executive Director of ACBO, the Addiction Counselor Certification Board of Oregon, and we're talking about the war on drugs, the forgotten war. And our telephone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Eric, I think for the last couple of years, ACBO has sponsored an event, usually around Labor Day, I believe it's called Hands Across the Bridge. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about that and what's the significance of what's the purpose of that?
Hands Across the Bridge is a media demonstration project, and it's to let the people of Oregon know that people do, in fact, recover, and that people do... are able to abstain from alcohol and other drugs and methamphetamine, that people do get into recovery. Because a lot of times people don't actually believe that people are able to get sober or that treatment works. And so Hands Across the Bridge is a media demonstration project where thousands of recovering people get together from Oregon and Washington, and we hold hands across the I-5 bridge between Oregon and Washington so that everyone can see, and it's been highlighted in the newspaper and on the news. And it's, all year long, all we hear about on television and on the news is about how bad addicts and alcoholics are and all of the destruction that they do. But we never hear any stories about people that get sober, and we don't hear about success stories. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons why people don't believe that treatment works is that it's not
glamorized or talked about.
Right. We don't talk about it that much. And people really need to understand that, we don't hold this sort of accountability to any other process. For example, like, if somebody gets arrested and goes to jail, and then they get out and they go commit another crime, like say they rob a bank or something, it's not like the police like pick up the person and they go, well, you know, you just robbed a bank, but we put you in jail like a couple months ago and it didn't seem to change your behavior, so I guess we might as well just cut you loose. Mm-hmm. They don't ever do that.
No, that's true.
They don't ever do that.
That's true. We got a call. Let's take this call. Eric and KBOO, you're on the air, Proverbial Perspectives.
Hello.
Question or comment? Hi.
Yeah, and there's a skeptical that there's some people, and I suspect there are other people who because of their own thought processes, whatever state of mind, whatever you want to call it, are not going to be reached by the treatment, and that it's almost a class difference, a difference in perspective that makes some people reachable, more reachable by the present treatment structure.
Mm-hmm,
And I want to say that all of this dependency issue is produced by the culture and the social structure that we live in.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
that the real ultimate solution is the changing of this whole society to make it driven by concern for people and not for the concentration of wealth.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, part of what the caller is saying is true, that there are social elements to the creation of addiction, but research is also real clear that there are genetic elements as well.
Mm-hmm.
We know that people of poverty have higher rates of substance abuse than the middle class and the upper class, and so
wait a minute.
We know that.
So what does that mean? I don't understand. Is that a genetic factor?
No. That there isn't just one reason. Yeah. There isn't just one thing. And people often try to simplify it and come up with one reason why people become alcoholic or drug addicted. Like they want to believe it's because of childhood trauma, or they want to believe it's because of poverty, or they want to believe that it's a genetic disorder, or they want to believe it's social injustice. And the truth is, it's all of those things. All of those things are a recipe for creating substance abuse in our society.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't just any one thing, because all of those things have been implicated.
There does seem to be a correlation, so to speak, with certain drugs, with certain ethnic groups. Methamphetamine is primarily, you find a lot of Caucasians using that drug. Or alcohol, we know Native Americans have propensity towards alcohol and have negative consequences of their drinking. African Americans, they have their thing. And most likely all of those things, weed and alcohol and all those kinds of things. But methamphetamine, I just wanted, because that is such a hot topic today, and it is, that does have such far-reaching effects here in Oregon, and in terms of how it affects families and the social fabric of Oregon. What sort of treatment modality works? Because I don't know of any, and I know when a person is, that is, there's nothing is so strong as a person who's ready to stop using drugs when they themselves decide to stop. But if you are talking about treatment, how much treatment is available for methamphetamines, and what methodology is used?
Well, there's not a lot of treatment available. As I previously said, treatment funding has been cut about 60% in Oregon over the last 5 years. And I mean, just to give you an example, this is February, and in February of 2002, there were 4,700 people in alcohol and drug treatment in the state of Oregon. As of February 2004, that number dropped from 4,700 down to 2,700. And God only knows how many people are in treatment now, probably far less than 2,700. So every year the numbers of people that are in treatment drops. Currently, Oregon ranks 45th in the U.S. for treatment access. We rank 49th in the U.S. for treatment access among 18 to 25-year-olds. Oregon is one of the most treatment-unfriendly states in the United States. Oregon is a horrible place to try and go to try and find treatment. In fact, a study was done by OMAS, the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Studies, and Portland State University, and they found that basically that one out of seven Oregonians that needs treatment actually gets treatment.
One out of seven.
One out of seven. So Oregon is an abysmal place to try and get treatment. But to answer your question in regards to, you know, what works with methamphetamine addicts, well, there isn't a lot of research. There's a little bit of research, but not a lot in regards to what are effective treatment programs with methamphetamine addicts. And one of the effective programs is called the Matrix Model. And the Matrix Model came out of California, and it is currently being used by a lot of treatment programs around Oregon. Cognitive behavioral approaches have been found to be effective. Motivational interviewing has been found to be effective. So there are a number of what we call evidence-based approaches that have been validated scientifically as being effective in being utilized in treatment.
Mm-hmm. Well, our time for being effective is just about up. And, Eric, I certainly want to encourage you to continue to do the wonderful work that you've been doing with ACBO over the years, and continue to advocate our legislators and encourage our legislators to perhaps increase attention to addiction as a whole for our families and for the society at large. So I certainly want to thank you for stopping by this program and encourage you to continue to do the fine work that you're doing.
Well, thank you very much, Shahid. I'm grateful to have the time.
Great. And I want to thank my audience for tuning in with me over the years. Certainly have appreciated the opportunity to do this program. This is my last program for Proverbial Perspectives doing this particular program. I'm going to step out of the way and allow some African, I'm not certain of the name of the program, but they deserve some time, and I need to probably move aside and allow others and younger folks to come in and have an opportunity to grow as I've grown during this program and as I've had the opportunity to work with this wonderful radio station. I'm going to continue to be involved in a variety of ways, but this particular time slot will be given up to some new folks, and we're excited about it. And I certainly want to thank those of you who have helped me over the years to present good programs and to do good programs. I want to thank you for allowing me to enter your home and to communicate with you. Shahid Ahmed, thanking you for your time this time. Looking forward to seeing you next time. Not perhaps on Proverbial Perspectives, but on other programs. Of course, I still do The Essence of Soul every Friday, every other Friday from 7 until 9. We'll be back with you tomorrow evening. And, of course, I still do Imam W.D. Muhammad and An Islamic Point of View every Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. So until we meet again... yours truly, Shahid Hamid, and thanks for the memories. Thank you so much. God bless. Peace. I'm out.